And a good afternoon. Welcome in. I'm Ian Grant. And this is the Sunday Money Show here at News Talk 1010 Toronto. Over the course of this, our financial opinions, solely those of the commentator, not necessarily those of Bellwether, Family Wealth Management, News Talk 1010, or Bell Media. Information discussed should not be construed as investment advice, and individuals should consult your financial advisor. And as usual, I am very pleased to welcome Senior Family Wealth Advisor Alan Cameron from Bellwether Family Wealth Management. Alan, good afternoon. Welcome in.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I am good, and if you're going to get in line with everyone else from religion to politics to everything else, I'm sure you'll have some wise advice on how the upcoming eclipse is going to affect the stock market and our funds and our banks, and this is just getting way out of hand.
As prophesied, this is the end of times. Yes, sell everything on Monday. Eclipse is coming Tuesday. That's it, yeah.
And then on Wednesday, we're all back to normal, right? It is just crazy. Just another. You know what? The last 5 years on this planet have been kind of kooky, and I guess this is kind of how it is going to continue. How are things though in the real world of finance out there, especially personal finance, obviously?
Well, if anything, they're kooky on the good side of kooky. The year's off to a pretty good start. First quarter has just ended. And pretty solid-looking returns for an awful lot of asset classes. Certainly the stock market for Canada and the U.S. Are a primary concern to us, and they both put in a pretty solid, impressive quarter, and now we're looking at 12-month returns that are similarly impressive. So, you know, I talk a lot about this with clients as we review volatility and, you know, how position portfolios ought to be positioned to manage volatility, particularly once you're into retirement. And the last, you know, 4 or 5 years is just a fantastic textbook example of how unpredictable markets can be. And yet, over the longer term, just how predictable they also have proven to be, too. You know, it's an ongoing thing. We just had new clients join us up this week and having this discussion with them to say that you've had a tremendous amount of ups and downs over the course of the last few years from largely unpredictable events. Nobody that I ran across accurately predicted the pandemic and what we would do in the years following it to deal with that threat. That wasn't a widely shared prediction, if there was one such a thing. So you got a portfolio that was subject to these sorts of severe impacts. I mean, the first month or two of the pandemic, February and March of 2020, that was some serious volatility. Markets reacted quite understandably with a good deal of fear and concern. The year 2020 didn't end up turning out all that bad because we had a couple of good months in there as well. The year of 2021, a very surprisingly solid rate of return, big returns for that year. 2022, pretty bad. Most people, I think, underestimate just how rough that year was. But major indices in the U.S. and Canada down 20% and more. And then this past year, turning out to be a pretty good year, too. So you're looking at a stretch of four, almost 5 years now, where you're double digits up 1 year, double digits down the next, double digits up the year after. And that kind of volatility can really severely impact a retiree's portfolio, because in those down markets, if you aren't careful, if you haven't properly constructed your financial plan and the investments that make that make up such a large part of your financial plan, if you haven't properly constructed that, then that kind of volatility can really have a severe impact. When markets decline, if you're systematically selling throughout, say, 2022 or 2020, then the money that you spend there, the money you systematically sell to just to meet your monthly income, never recovers. It's not there to recover anymore. And even though the last 5 years' rate of return, the last 3 year rate of return, are quite normal, quite predictable in the sense that when we put together long-term financial plans, we're assuming volatility in the short run and over time, in the longer run, a somewhat predictable and sustainable rate of return. Well, that's what this past 5 years delivered. but delivered it in a almost cartoon-like fashion that it was just so volatile, so full of unexpected ups and downs and conflicts and whatnot. And yet, that really isn't that abnormal. And you still, we all have this rather myopic focus, I'll call it. It's not really that. We're all just biased towards recency. And even though the last few years seems like it's full of all sorts of ups and downs and everything else, you pick any other five-year stretch in the last 100 years, and I'll fill in some of the crazy volatility and unbelievable events that went on during that period of time. In fact, volatility, conflict, crises, problems, recoveries, and the inevitable and thus far uninterrupted progress of humanity and capitalism, all of those things are baked in. All of those things are normal. And what we've just seen over the last 5 years, well, that just helps to drive the point home. So, this year, so far this year, is looking pretty good, looking pretty healthy. And any wise investor is not going to take that as any sort of a safety or a guarantee. You always have to have a portfolio well enough diversified to stand up to the unexpected, to stand up to the unpredictable, and to come out not just surviving it, but in a position to thrive, in a position to take advantage.
And the taking advantage, man. I mean, I was joking off the top, obviously, about the eclipse. But, you know, there are certainly people taking it. There's a great article in the Star today about how many different churches are, you know, predicting the end of the world and send us your money. Well, what are you going to do with it if the world ends? But that's not the point. The point is that there are always people out there who are yelling and screaming. And over the course of the years of us doing the show, the one thing that I have learned is you pick up three newspapers, you're getting three very different stories. And so if you're going to go off the deep end reading one of them, make sure you pick the right one.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe that's a valuable lesson in all this. The day's newspapers are not really where you want to be turning for this sort of advice. Right? The newspapers are going to sensationalize whatever day the day's news and events are. That isn't necessarily items. It's the stuff you're reading in that newspaper day to day is not necessarily anything that's relevant over the long term. I've said it before, early in my career, I went to a presentation and somebody had made an accurate assessment of how I think the media works, which is to say the most accurate headline that could ever be written would be nothing much happened today. And even if it did, it wouldn't affect you. So that's pretty well. You could write that headline every day and be right for 99.9% of all people listening or reading. Right. So to follow the daily news and the blaring headlines and react to them is part of the problem. Right. It's not so much that whether they're accurate, inaccurate, or otherwise. It's just that that shouldn't be the guiding principle for your investments, for your financial plan. Your approach, a more disciplined and long-term approach, has to rise above all of that. It has to ignore the day-to-day clutter, be positioned, as I say, to defend you against these sorts of things, whether predicted or otherwise. But as you point out, to take advantage as well. And since I know you in radio and everybody who works at the station are all going to be big fans of WKRP, you just reminded me of that one thing where they had a preacher on who did a show hawking materials and everything else. And when they finally had to cancel his show because of complaints, he said, "What am I going to do? I've got a whole warehouse full of the end is coming lawn furniture to move."
So, yeah. It's true, though. Yeah. And, you talk about this thing, and I guess, you know, there's a certain, you can talk about it because you understand both angles. When you're looking at it, you can see what's right, what's wrong. But for the average person out there, honestly, who's worked their entire life, they're, you know, this is their savings. And you have people on all sides of the fence just trying to give them this advice. Some of it is excellent and some of it is not good at all. And the real difficulty is, you know, obviously, you know, people who have a financial advisor can pick up the phone and say, "Hey, you know, what do you think? What's your opinion on this?" But for other people, I can imagine they're left spinning.
Yeah, and I think it's important too. Not every financial advisor is necessarily cut out for the task, right? Now, there's good and bad in every industry. So if you've got somebody who ostensibly is your financial coach, the one in your corner, and yet you find that they are pushed and pulled by the same, you know, emotional reactions that you are. Or no matter how long you've worked with them, every time you say, hey, I read a nasty headline, do you think we should sell? And they said yes every time. Well, that's probably not the one for you. There should at least be a rational discussion. Now, in the end, we are paid to advise people as fiduciaries. We are required to act in their best interests, but do so in a way that you also always recognize and remember that this is their money. You can provide the very best of advice, but in the end, it's not up to me to decide. It's just that we have a fairly high duty of care to make sure that we provide them with the best advice, the greatest degree of perspective that's permissible in an uncertain world. So, you know, you would hope that if you're paying somebody to be in your corner to help you through this sort of volatility, and really nobody, I shouldn't even say, I was going to say, nobody cares much in the great times, but you should, because those great times are always the precedent to the to the bad times. People get caught up in good times and start being much, much more comfortable with risk than they ought to be.
Boy, have we been over the past few months. Can I take a break?
And
Let's come back after traffic if we can. He's listening to Senior Family Wealth Advisor Alan Cameron from Bellwether Family Wealth Management. If you would like to reach Alan, you can give him a call, 800-717-8117. His website, 1LAlanCameron.com. And we're back. This is the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm Ian Grant, and I am joined this afternoon by Senior Family Wealth Advisor Alan Cameron from Bellwether Family Wealth Management. Alan, we keep mentioning the word wealth, Bellwether Family Wealth Management, and we talk about generational wealth. Never a bad time, I guess, to just kind of touch on why it's so important to look forward as opposed to just to this tax season.
Yeah, that's just the nature of taxes and planning, I'm afraid. It's by the time you sit down to, you know, if you only do sit down and kind of review your whole situation at tax time, or if you only take stock of just how much money is flushed by the government every year on your behalf, if you only do that during tax time, well, you've already missed the opportunity to make any change to it. You can't undo what's been done in 2023 at this stage. If you are even remotely guilty of this, well, now's the time. As you are preparing this year's tax return, also take it upon yourself. Now is the time to say, okay, what are we going to do differently for 2024 while we're still in 2024, while you can still do something about it? I think it's pretty important to address, if nothing else, because it really gives us a better picture. When you start to look at your tax situation and ideally plan around that, critically important for business owners, because there are so many other options to explore, so many other strategies to consider as a business owner, as opposed to a straight T4 salaried employer or employee. But now would be the time, because once the tax season's done and you've bit your lip and realized just how bad the extraction of taxes from your family's finances, they then say, well, you know, summer's here, and get back to all of the other things that distract you in life, family and all the other obligations that you have day to day. It's too easy to forget it. Next thing you know, we're into 2025 and it's too late to do anything about 2024. So absolutely, it's the time. And, you know, I think to get started in that whole process, maybe we'll go through just some of the considerations, some of the questions that financial planning approach and that first few meetings that you're going to have if you haven't worked with somebody before. What sort of questions are important? What sort of information do you need to bring together into one sort of cohesive plan? Get it all on the table at one time to look at the full picture, the totality of your financial life as a family. And it can include, as you say, multiple generations. Increasingly, just that's the demographics of it all. We're seeing many, many more of our clients who are, say, in their 50s or so, dealing with their aging parents and the issues that surround their care and their prosperity and comfort, but also the issues surrounding passing that wealth down. That's a weekly thing now. It's a constant conversation for us, and that's certainly important. But what is it that we do? Well, there's a bunch of questions that I think are vital. There's only a few big questions. The answers that people provide to those then open up massive degrees of complications and other considerations. But it's relatively simple to look at it. I've got basically seven simple questions that I think open up the beginning of that financial discussion. So generally, first and foremost, I'm going to ask, where do you stay? What's the house? Where's your home? If there's a cottage as well. Real estate, property, it's such an important part of the Canadian financial landscape. We've talked many times about the fact that it's too important a part. It shouldn't be that monstrous amount of your life's earnings go to simply sheltering you and your family. But we're here now, and it won't be a quick fix to get us past it. So it becomes an awfully important thing. Vast numbers of Canadians, it's just there's no blame to be assessed to the individual household if you've spent too much on real estate in this part of the world. There's blame to be assigned, but it's not yours. It's unfortunate that we have to spend so much just to keep a roof over your head here. But having done that, and given how much of the family's total net worth is likely to be tied up in that real estate, that becomes an important conversation. Nowadays, it's going to be an even more important conversation just how manageable the debt is now that we're not really getting free money anymore. Interest rates are starting to be an issue. So first and foremost, we want to understand what people have got in terms of real estate exposure and if that's appropriate to them. There are plenty of people who are just living in too much house. There are others where, you know, maybe they've put this off too long and it's getting in the way. We've run across both of those situations. So a good discussion to have in the context of your long-term financial plan. Next thing, what do you earn? How do you earn? Where does the money come from? What are your financial resources? So if it's a straight salaried position, fine. We'll want to talk about pensions and things like that. But we need to figure out what sort of income potential is coming into the family unit. And from there, determine some of the other considerations, like is there a better tax treatment, a better approach to seeing that you get to keep more of all of that hard-earned cash. So we certainly want to know the nature of income, the potential for it. We're going to be making long-term projections for just about anybody. New clients who came on this week were 80, but I'm still going to make a 20-year projection. It's still long-term for almost anybody. But if you're 40 years old, we're making 50 years of projection, and it's good to have a conversation about where the income for that family is going to be coming over the many years to come. Next, we want to talk about what you already have. What have you managed to accumulate at this point? What assets do you hold? Where are they held? How are they held? How are they going to be taxed? And that's where a lot of the discussions surrounding the investment portfolio, which we talk a lot about on the show here, but we're going to talk about whether or not your asset mix and how you've accumulated assets thus far is ideal, if it's optimizing the after-tax rate of return, if it's optimizing the future for your accumulation. We might even be at that point because, again, all these things come up in the course of a month or two in a practice like mine. We might be talking about whether or not we need to pay down debt these days, right? So TFSAs are lovely. It's nice to have money in there. But if you've got a, you know, let's say as an entrepreneur, you've got a higher interest rate mortgage, this might be one of those times where you say, hey, if you're having to pay 6.5% on a mortgage, that's 6.5% after tax money. Maybe it's worth starting to consider some debt repayment on some of the debts that people carry now. Certainly if it's persistent credit card, consumer debt, things like that. But, you know, we ran across a radio listener not too long ago, a month or so ago, only had access to about 10% mortgage financing. And at that level, no, it's not really worth having a nice, healthy TFSA balance, but paying 10% after-tax interest on debt. And also, we might want to look at somebody's accumulated portfolio. It may be counterintuitively to say, now we're your family's net worth will increase faster if we reduce these debts rather than just focus on accumulating portfolios. So we certainly want to know what you have. The next is, what can you save? And this is where that high cost of real estate really gets in the way for Canadians. We spend so much on shelter that it can be difficult to, I mean, you know, you have to pay the bills, you've got to eat. And after that, finding enough left over to accomplish your long-term goals towards retirement. That's the real challenge. And part of that, again, is we're going to try and do it in a manner that we benefit from the benefit of better tax strategies, at least make the burden of saving towards retirement a little easier to bear if we can do it with pre-tax dollars. So we'll want to address all of that. What are you capable of saving? And have a real rational and sober discussion. That is it possible for you to live the lifestyle you're leading right now and have a reasonable expectation of retirement at some point or another, whether we like it or not, even if it's just for health, we all end up getting retired. It's unlikely that you'll be healthy, happy, working 40-hour weeks until you're 80 years of age. So retirement is a reality for us. And we want to make sure that we're on a path that is reasonable, that's sustainable, that lifestyle you'll be able to, that you can enjoy now, that you can continue to enjoy long after you've lost the ability to generate more savings. Still, then we also want to know, what risks are there? What keeps you safe? What keeps the family safe? And this is where you talk about various protections, whether, you know, is the mortgage insured? Is your income insured from disability? Do you need life insurance? You know, we talk as often as not on here about the fact that you may well have outlived the need for insurance.
Taylor, let me jump in, because that's a great place to break off. We'll come back after traffic, because that's one of my favorite questions, because it was one that I never even thought to ask myself before you brought it up one show we're talking. And I just blurted out, well, how can you ever have too much life insurance? How can you have too much any insurance? And you're like, all right, stop. Let's examine that. So I tell you what, let's stop, and we will do that after traffic coming up. This is the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010. Toronto. I'm Ian Grant. I'm joined this afternoon by Senior Family Wealth Advisor Alan Cameron from Bellwether Family Wealth Management. You can talk to him about generational wealth, as we have. We can talk about retirement, education planning, RRSPs, investment strategy, tax reduction, obviously retirement insurance, and more. Give us a shout at 416-872-1010. And as always, regular texting rates apply, but you're welcome to text us at 71010. If you'd like to reach Alan, you can. His number 1-800-717-8117, or check out his website, 1LAlanCameron.com. Hey, we're back. This is the Sunday Money Show here at News Talk 1010 Toronto. Hello, I'm Ian Grant. Thanks for joining us today. I'm joined by Alan Cameron from Bellwether Family Wealth Management. Just before the break, now we're talking about a bunch of things today, Alan. One of them, we're going over the seven critical questions to the financial planning process. But you mentioned about insurance, and boy, is that ever a critical area to discuss, because I'm the one who has, I said before the break, went sailing in going, hey, Alan, how could I ever have too much insurance?
Yeah, and this comes from that question about what keeps your family safe? What's safeguarding the income flow into the family? What happens if, you know, whether it's a critical illness or some other ailment, what comes along, or a premature death? Is everybody going to be okay? And insurance often is a part of the answer to that, especially when you start out, especially when you're young. Lots of responsibilities. I had a grandchild last week, so my youngest son now has doubled up the responsibilities he has to children, so two sons for him. And that means that at that day, the second, probably their last child, so there's the birth of their second child, their need for life insurance is probably the highest it will ever be. That at that moment, They've got mortgages. They've got a couple of kids to raise and educate, and a lot of life ahead, but not yet enough time to have accumulated enough resources to cover all of that if something happens to either of them. So they have insurance. And that insurance is there to make sure, not that they, you know, the family, if something were to happen, is better off. That's not the goal, because it is a still quite rare thing for people to die that young, but it's not inconceivable. And we want to make sure that they're, you know, spending at a at an affordable level to protect from financial calamity. So pretty inexpensive term insurance coverage is what the vast majority of people need. If you need life insurance, that's the kind you likely need 95 times out of 100. That's what we want. Because the goal is to have all of that money wasted. We want you to live the next 20, 25 years, pay off debts, raise the kids, accumulate money towards your own retirement. And if at the end of that 25 years, that's all gone according to plan, as it will for so many of us, then you've outlived your need for insurance. And it may simply be an expense that you no longer need to incur. Now, I hope that the money that's spent on that sort of insurance is wasted. I don't want to make a claim on my life insurance, nor should you. We want to just have the cheapest amount of coverage to safeguard the family's future. And that's what we do. And you do a similar sort of analysis when it comes to disability insurance. How do we safeguard your income? What happens if, on the rare chance that something threatens that ability to earn income, that the family won't be better off? That can't be. But at least it is not destitute, not forced into the streets. That we want to make sure that while it's unlikely, that you'll survive it. So often enough, again, that means, and we've had more than a few listeners where we've spoken to, where they have coverage at work and they decide to buy coverage again so that they're extra covered, so they're even safer still, and are shocked to learn that when we look at those provisions that they have in place, that that policy will not pay you when you get disabled, right? You can't be better off. There's a limit to how much income can be replaced.
You know where I noticed it, though, Alan, is travel insurance. Because travel insurance, when I'm traveling, I think I've got like six different ways I'm covered right now, from credit cards to work to everything else. It's amazing.
It is. And, you know, it's worth people at least taking heed of that. I'm covered by my group insurance through our company. I'm also pretty well covered on just about anything that could happen through the credit card provisions that I have in place as well. But I am absolutely certain that if I rent that car when I go down there, that I don't need their insurance. Absolutely certain of that. And yet, they, you know, they're there to sell it, right? So you're at the wicket and you sure you just don't want for an extra $7 a day, you know, and all of this sort of thing? No, I don't need any of it. And it's tempting. You go, well, yeah, it'll be such a hassle-free experience if I do bang up this car to just walk away. Well, that's what I'm going to do anyway, so I don't need that coverage yet. And so, yeah, it's worth knowing that certainly where that overlap is, all the more critical if you're paying for yourself, not through an employer. And if you are that employer, then really worth spending some time to make sure that you've got the appropriate coverages in place. And all the more so if you've got employees as well that are part of all that coverage. So often enough, worth a review of those sorts of things at least every couple of years.
Now, just we talk about second opinions and people, you know, coming to sit down with you. And over the last year, I've noticed two areas where I was just bleeding cash. And unfortunately, didn't get to a point till, you know, the interest rates and everything else kind of started hitting home that I'm like, all right, I really got to check this. But one were the prepayments on my credit card. Holy Nelly, I can't tell you how much I was wasting every month with these silly $15, $20 a month things that I'd long forgotten about.
Yeah.
And as I said, the other one was insurance.
Yeah. And, you know, a simple enough way for me to focus on it, and we'll pass that idea along to clients as well, is whatever you're wasting, you've got to double it. If you think, that's just $10 a month, I can't be bothered checking into it today, whether I still need that subscription, whether I still need that coverage, whatever pre-authorized stuff's going through, it's just $10 a month. But it's not, it's 20, because you had to earn the money first, pay the taxes, then pay that. And So if $10 a month for you to be concerned with, well, how about 20? You can pretty much look at any sort of expense like that, any money that's unnecessarily being spent, and double it because you're paying that plus the taxes. So, yeah, it's worth a periodic review for that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Tell you what, if you do want to follow up with Alan, by the way, you can always give him a call, 1-800-717-8117, or check out his website, 1lalancameron.com. Alan, we are talking about the 7 critical questions to the financial planning process.
Yeah, so let's do a quick recap. Number 1, where do you stay? Tell us about your real estate, where any investments you have there. Then we want, what do you earn? Tell us about your ability to earn, how those sources come to you. What do you have? What have you accumulated? What have you managed to set aside for the future? What can you save? What kind of budgeting will allow you to continue to accumulate money beyond the immediate cost of living and the high cost of sheltering ourselves here? And then it was, what keeps that safe? What type of coverages are in place to protect you should anything rare but unfortunate befall the family? And then 6, what do you want? I think people don't spend nearly enough time figuring out where they're headed, right? And the old expression is, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. Well, that's an awfully accurate statement when it comes to people's financial lives, unfortunately, because if you don't have a clue of where you hope to arrive, it's difficult to monitor your progress along the way too. You know, it's good to have some mile markers on the road so that you can check, see how far you've come, and that you're still on that right path. And that path can change, right? Things change, whether it's in your job, whether it's in taxation, whether it's interest rates. Things come along and disrupt the path that you're on. And if you weren't sure which path that was, it's hard to know if you've come off of it. So we need people to spend time, and that's part of the craft for people in my line of work, is to help people figure out what those objectives are, what's important to you. And determining that goes a long way to then figuring out how to get you there. It's, all right, we need a certain lifestyle at a certain age. And with so many of us now, retirement is not necessarily you put in your 30, 35 years, you get your gold watch, sit on a rocking chair for a couple of years and pass away, right? That's a long outdated view of retirement. What's much more likely for us is people want to know that they have the financial flexibility, the freedom to say, if I choose to stop working at some point, that I can. Many don't choose to do so. Many simply change the way they work, and I think that's increasingly the case and should be. You want to know that you've got enough financial freedom that by, let's say, age 55, if you couldn't work, if you decided you just don't want to keep up with the stress and the pace of your current line of work, or you want to get into a business or some sort of a side gig, whatever that is, it's nice to know that you're on a path that will get you to that point. And, you know, I've joked with a lot of clients over the years that the most dangerous and volatile employee of...
And I'm not sure. I think we may have lost Alan. We will do our best to get him back if we can. But right now...
There you are. I can hear you again.
That was interesting. Right. Sorry, Alan.
Where'd you lose?
I'll tell you what. Let's figure out what's going on. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back. So let's let the traffic folks come in for a bit while we start kicking the tires and finding out what is going on here. This is the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm Ian Grant, and I am joined for the most part today by Senior Family Wealth Advisor Alan Cameron from Bellwether Family Wealth Management. And if you'd like to reach Alan, you can. His website, 1lalancameron.com, or you can always give him a call at 1-800-717-8117. That's 1-800-717-8117. And a good Sunday afternoon Welcome in. I'm Ian Grant. Thank you for joining us today. You're on the Sunday Money Show on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm joined by Senior Family Wealth Advisor Alan Cameron this afternoon from Bellwether Family Wealth Management. You want to find out more, by the way, about Alan? You can. His number, quite importantly, is 1-800-717-8117. 1-800-717-8117. And you can get all his contact information on his website, 1LAlanCameron.com. And Alan, sometimes the texters say it so much better than I can or probably would be allowed to, because I got a text message here. It says, what is Alan Cameron's number? Can he help me? I'm retired. Banks are absolutely useless. I hear that more and more and more, unfortunately, because what I'm finding, and I went through sort of this experience with my bank, was that they know what they know, but the minute you go even an inch outside that safe area, you're getting transferred all over the place, and no one will commit to an answer.
Well, I've said many times about this business, it's not so much that you need to know the answers to every question, but you do need to know the question. You need to know when there's an issue in front of you, that you need to know when something needs to be addressed, that a risk is present. If you just don't know enough to recognize that, then I can't expect the clients to do it. That's why they came to us. Yeah. And I think that it's a very difficult proposition for big Canadian financial institutions to keep up the level of training. At some point, if you've got an employee who knows all they need to know to manage every client's financial affairs, well, then they're quite valuable, and often quite valuable and better paid when they leave the bank and go somewhere else, right? So it's difficult for them to keep that level of expertise available on a constant basis for you wandering into the branch. And if they don't know the questions, then it's up to you to know them or find someone who does. The answers, well, what if the answers are that we need a foreign accountant to deal with some issue? What if the answers are that there's a trust that needs to be established? Well, that's a legal issue as well. It could be that your insurance needs in order to keep a business in the family, but only two of four siblings want to be part of the business. Well, maybe that's something that needs not just some legal and accounting expertise, but also some insurance expertise. We deal with the taxes on the death of the founders of the business. So if you don't know the questions, the answers are certainly not going to be accidentally stumbling into your portfolio. So I think it's important that you're dealing with somebody who, on the one hand, understands that there are issues present, but also hopefully has the humility and the understanding to recognize that you don't have to have every answer, and better to be positive about an answer, better to be certain of a solution that you've offered, than to venture a guess and hope that it's a good one. So I think that's what our industry has to get better at doing. But I would liken it to you going into your physician's office and saying, I've got this ache and pain here, and they cut you off and say, don't worry about it. That's fine. No further questions necessary. Or worse still, that sounds like this disease here, take this powerful drug and treat it.
That's more common.
You know, you don't want a prescription that is sloppily handed down, and you also don't want a physician who didn't know to ask a few other questions to find out whether or not you do have an issue or whether it was indigestion. Yeah.
But much like a phone support person, or for that matter, my physician, the difference also is that when I contact you, you've got the peer support from Bellwether, from your colleagues, so many resources that you have to find not just the answer, but it's sometimes different angles to that answer.
Yeah, we need to know that there's an issue, we need to know the question, and we need to know where to find the answer and how to implement the solution. But to miss on any one of those aspects is to underserve those clients and their financial potential.
As I said, if you'd like to reach Alan, you can. It is easy. Give him a call. His number is 1-800-717-8117. And his website, 1LAlanCameron.com. Alan, today on the Sunday Money Show, we are talking about the seven critical questions to the financial planning process, and we're working through them one by one.
Yeah, we were down to number six of what will you want, how to establish your objectives, and then having helps you get on a path that will get you there. Certainly one of the biggest parts of your financial plan is establishing those objectives and putting together a credible plan that you can work with, that you can live with. It's just math. If you come to me and say, look, I'm 50 years of age. I haven't saved a dime. I would like to retire at 55 to $500,000 a year in after tax income in retirement. Well, I'll tell you how much you need to save. I'm not the one who has to save it. And if I say to you, well, you only have to save five times your current working income in order to achieve that objective, then it's not a realistic plan, right? But we're trying to put together plans that you can live with, that you create the right kind of balance between living for today and hopefully everything goes wonderfully well for you and your family, and you live a good, comfortable retirement, if that's the objective. There's other objectives, too. It could be buying a family cottage. It could be buying into a business. It could be any number of things. We're there to help you determine those, prioritize it, and put you on the path towards them. Now, once we've done that, the final question is, what are you going to leave? It would be incorrect, I think, to say that a great financial plan is one where you live a great life, accumulating for retirement, you live a fantastic retirement, and you spend every last dollar on the day you die, right? The old Errol Flynn line, any man who dies with more than $10 to his name is a failure, right? Well, that's all fine and well if you knew, and you can give me an absolute guarantee that you're going to live healthy, happy, and then drop dead at a certain day, then you can build those plans. But the reality of it is, if we're going to have a safe financial plan for you, it is very likely you're going to leave something, because we don't know when you're going to die. We don't know how your health will be in the final years of life and all these things. So we're normally going to be providing some kind of an estate planning guidance. We want to be able to make sure that the residual of your assets, whatever's left over, whatever you haven't needed and haven't used in your life, ends up in the hands of the people you love the most, gets there with the least amount of tax burden possible, and that we maximize the benefit and the tax savings, not just for you during your life, but into the next generation and into the hands of the people you want to see the overflow, the excess. Everything you've managed to accumulate but didn't, unfortunately, get all the chance to spend and enjoy. That's your estate. And often enough, it might just be a house. Well, those aren't insignificant assets in this part of the world. So it can still easily be seven-figure estates that we're passing down. And we're going to talk about how to convey those assets with the least amount of government interference and the least amount of tax and fees and expenses and everything else. So constructing that estate plan often is as simple as saying, we can go down path A, and in that path, you have a reasonable level of savings and a nice balance in life while you're working. You have a nice, comfortable retirement. And you then die with, let's say, $1 million to pass down. Well, that's path A. Path B is exactly the same in every respect, except at the end, that $1 million is tax-free to your estate as opposed to fully taxed.
Mm.
Right. And if we can construct these things, and it's often as simple as that, two paths that give you the same lifestyle while you're working and in through retirement, and at the end of it all, one leaves hundreds of thousands or in sometimes millions of dollars more to the people that you want to see have that money. And simply through lack of planning, sometimes doesn't end that way, that it ends up with substantial tax liabilities and expenses. So where do you want that money to go at the end? What do you want to leave? Some people have absolute designs on this. You know, I've got three kids. I want $1 million each for them. Well, that's all fine too, Will. That's an objective and it's an estate planning goal. But we can do both. So it's just a question of, again, trying to figure out what your objectives are and making sure that the most efficient plan is the one we choose to get you there.
There you go. Seven critical questions to the financial planning process. I give you 20 seconds. Why should someone pick up the phone and call you?
Well, I think we started out the show talking about just how many somewhat unique challenges we've all had to deal with over the course of the last few years. It's worth working with somebody who recognizes what's different from the past, and therefore we don't have a lesson we can draw on in the past. and somebody who recognizes when it's not different. And in that case, maybe there is an awful lot we can learn from the past and apply for you.
That's a great point. Alan, as always, thank you so much. A great show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You'd like to reach Alan, 1-800-717-8117. His website, 1LAlanCameron.com. I'm Ian Grant. This has been the Sunday Money Show on News Talk 1010 Toronto.